We don't just want to take the expected payoff, which is the subjective probabilities, times the payoffs, and discount them back to the present. We want to make some kind of correction for how risky those payoffs are. What I'm doing here is, don't just take this and multiply it by this to get these numbers over here. No, first I want you to make an adjustment to each of these probabilities. I'm going to call that a risk aversion adjustment. And take each of these probabilities, multiply them by some adjustment factor. We'll worry about where that came from in a minute. That'll create adjusted probabilities. Instead of this one, we'll multiply it by 0.939 to get 0.845, a little less. And this one, we're going to multiply by 1.37 to get a number that's a little bit higher. Now we pretend that these numbers are the probabilities, and we multiply those by the payoffs, and that gives us these numbers here, which we then add up to get the expected future value, which is now no longer the expected payoff. I now call this the expected future value because I've made these corrections, and it's not 1,000 anymore, it's 1,160. This is a way to consider risk in this problem. Now let me give you an example taken from real life. In the last presidential election, the University of Iowa ran a market where you place a bet that would pay off a dollar if and only if Clinton would be elected president. Otherwise you would get nothing. And you could place a bet that would pay off a dollar if and only if Dole would be elected president. Otherwise you'd get nothing. Those are called state contingent claims. They give you a dollar under one state, but nothing otherwise. This was an SEC sanctioned market. There's a website for it. So let's ask ourselves what these bets should sell for. First of all, what would the sum of those bets sell for? Suppose I bought one of each. I arrange to get a dollar if and only if Clinton were to be elected, I get a dollar if and only if Dole were to be elected, and I get a dollar if and only if something else happened. What would be the current price for that whole portfolio of bets? I'll take anyone's answer on this. About a dollar, right? Ignoring the time value of money, it should cost exactly a dollar. You see that if you have that portfolio, you're sure to get a dollar no matter what, because one of those three things has to happen. So if you're sure to get a dollar no matter what in the future and there's no time value of money, that has to cost exactly a dollar now if there are, now this phrase, no riskless arbitrage opportunities, which will keep coming up in this course. Let's take a look at the individual bets. Suppose the market thought that there was a subjective probability that Clinton would be elected president of 60% and a 40% chance that Dole, and we'll just imagine that that's the only two things that can happen. And in fact, in the market, the final security had virtually no price. What do you think people would pay now for a dollar if and only if Clinton would be elected?
60 cents.
Zero? Oh. Why would you play zero?
He can't run again. I'm just...
Oh. Actually, I always thought that Clinton could run again, except the first name will be different. Hillary. When Clinton was elected in 1992, I really expected 16 years of Clinton. Maybe we'll see that, but not sequentially, apparently. Suppose this was actually your subjective probability. Would you pay less than 60 cents?
Yes, sure.
You would?
Yes.
Would you pay 40 cents? Would you also pay less than 40 cents for Dole by the same argument? No, you wouldn't, right? You can see you're getting yourself in trouble. Because the sum of the two, you ought to be willing to pay a dollar. So if you're willing to pay less than 60 cents for Clinton, it's my belief a rational person would be willing to pay more than 40 cents for Dole, because the sum has to be a dollar. What's important here isn't simply just the subjective probability that Clinton's going to be elected. If that were true, I should just use these subjective probabilities when I calculate expected values. I shouldn't make any adjustments. But if you think about the lesson of the capital asset pricing model, what it says is this, that if you live in a society of risk-averse people, they value dollars more when they're poor than when they're rich. The diminishing marginal utility idea is in here. In other words, if you've got $1,000 and I give you another dollar, that might mean a lot to you. But if you have $1,000,000 and I give you another dollar, it doesn't mean very much to you. So you value having an extra dollar more when you're poor than when you're rich. Suppose you believe when Clinton is elected president, we're going to have the biggest run of prosperity in its peacetime history. So if Clinton gets elected, you're going to get that dollar when you're going to be rich. another hand, you might have believed that when Dole gets elected, you're going to get that dollar when we're now going to go into a recession, when you're poor. So what that says is that you should be willing to pay more than 40 cents to get a dollar when Dole is elected, because when you get that dollar, it's worth more to you. So you might actually be willing to pay 45 cents to get a dollar when Dole is elected, and then of course it has to add to one. You'd be paying 55 cents when Clinton was going to be elected, because when Clinton was going to be elected, you get a dollar, but it wouldn't be worth as much compared to the situation we get a dollar when Dole's going to be elected. So your risk aversion is playing a role in determining the actual price along with the subjective probability. Now I will use then these risk-adjusted numbers, or the numbers I'll use to multiply payoffs, to get expected future values. Those values that I'm expecting in the future reflect not only my subjective beliefs, but also my attitudes towards risk, encompassing the fact that it does worth less when I'm rich and more when I'm poor. Now these numbers are going to be important. They're called risk-neutral probabilities. They're risk-neutral probabilities because we can value things after that, just forgetting about risk. We've already included the risk in those numbers. So in fact, we can do what you were criticizing earlier. We can just calculate the expected payoff by multiplying this by those numbers and then discount by the riskless return to get the current value. Risk is being considered in the adjustment that we've made to these probabilities. But once we've made that adjustment, we can then value things as if we ignored risk, as if we were risk neutral. So they're called risk neutral probabilities. Now here's why this is important in this course. Option prices in modern option pricing theory depend directly on risk neutral probabilities. Those risk neutral probabilities, it's true, depend on subjective probabilities and risk aversion, but you don't really have to know anything about subjective probabilities or anything separate about risk aversion. You only have to know about the combined result in their form as risk neutral probabilities. So when you look at the Black-Scholes formula, for example, or other option pricing models, you won't see anything in there about subjective probabilities, actually. You won't see anything in there about risk aversion. But you will see something in there that looks like a risk-neutral probability. It's not that the model ignores subjective probabilities and risk aversion when it values a derivative. It's just that it's able to summarize that information into the risk-neutral probability that you see in the formula. So when you look at the Black-Scholes formula later, for an example, you won't have to know the expected return of the asset underlying the option, the subjective expected return. All you'll have to know is the volatility, which you can interpret as, if you'd like, as a risk-neutral volatility, a volatility based on risk-neutral probabilities, although I'll show you at that point that there the distinction between risk-neutral probabilities and subjective probabilities for measuring volatility isn't too important. But the key is you don't have to know the mean return. When you look at the binomial option pricing formula, even be clearer, when we develop it, we'll start out and I'll say, look, what are your subjective probabilities? But you'll see that they play no role at all in valuing the option. But there is a probability that does affect the value of the option, but it is a risk-neutral probability. It's not a subjective one. That means it's not a probability that's necessarily in anybody's mind, but it is built up implicitly from combining these two things together. It's just that we don't have to be explicit about that in the model. We don't have to really say how that happens. We try to measure the risk-neutral probabilities directly, use those to value the option without worrying about what people really think or how risk-averse they really are. One of the reasons why modern option pricing theory is so successful is it doesn't have to measure these things. These are hard to know. How do you know how people really think? How do you know how risk-averse people are? In the capital asset pricing model, you have to know those things. In option pricing theory, you don't. You only have to know, in effect, this combined product of these two. It's like saying, you have to know Y, you know that it's equal to A times B, but you don't have to know what A or B is separately. Most people who apply modern option pricing theory do not understand this. I want you to try to understand it. That's one of the goals of this course, is not to shirk away from what are relatively difficult economic concepts. One of the reasons people have trouble understanding this is they don't know that risk-neutral probabilities actually embody these two pieces of information packaged together. That's one of the ways that will help them understand why that information isn't explicitly there, but only implicitly or indirectly through the risk-neutral probability itself.